this. So we are, I'm admitting three more people. I want to thank you all for coming to this pop-up Jewish burial discussion. It came out of our last emergency financial and case management affinity group call. And clearly it's something that people are interested in. So Jen, who is the chair of that affinity group, also happens to have a Jewish burial program at JFSLA, and she's going to talk with us about that. So take it away.
Thank you. So I took over, so I'm going to give a little intro to the program and sort of the history, and then it might be helpful. I want to have time to go through the application, but basically, oh, if everyone could mute themselves real quick. So it might be helpful to at least know who has a program, because this can end up being a discussion. I already know that JFS in Boston does have, you know, something in writing talking about their program, and I think part of it is we don't want to all reinvent the wheel. We spent a lot of time with a student doing this project. So JFS was founded in 1854 as a burial society. So we are the oldest social service agency in Los Angeles. We're obviously very, very different. And I've been with JFS for 18 years. And so I started as a direct service staff. And when I started at the senior center, I knew about this program where people came in and asked for a burial. And we were supposed to screen them. It wasn't really all that clear what we did. And then we knew that the cemeteries and mortuaries pretty much donated. And if people came in with a lot of money, they got mad at us. That was sort of my introduction to the program. And so now I've been with JFS this amount of time. In 2008, 2009, we started a centralized intake program, and that's what I supervise. The Jewish Free Burial Program, we have like multiple locations, like I'm sure many of you do. And it's an agency-wide program, but it was always coordinated by someone. And nobody wanted to coordinate it, and then it moved around. And about 2 years ago, it moved to my department. So before that, when we would get a call, I was sending it to someone else. And we had an application, but it wasn't that clear. And you know, it was rotated around different social workers who would screen. So it's been under Central Access for about 2 years, and I'm going to tell you what it is. And then I'll work through the application, and I think we'll get that done, and then we can go around and talk about everyone's different program and how they work. So we have a group of cemeteries and mortuaries that are part of this program, the Jewish Free Burial Program. We have two cemeteries that do in-ground. We have one that does crypts. And then we have just one freestanding, for people coming in, I'm just describing the JFS Free Burial Program. We have one freestanding, just a mortuary. And then we have Haver Kadisha that sort of does the program and sort of does, they do it, but it's different. And we are the screeners, and Federation is the funder, and they pay very little. I would say a nominal amount per burial. So it rotates through the cemeteries and mortuaries, and then they get paid a nominal amount. It's like a donation, practically. It's under $500. So I think, and people call, and there's a screening process. So I'm going to ask Lisa to share the application, work through it with you, talk about our approval process, and then hopefully we'll have time for everyone to share their program, because I'm sure they're all different. So we had a student, a joint HUC social work student, that reached out to many of your organizations, because she revamped this application for us so that we had something we could send out. We used to meet with everyone in person, and starting about a year and a half ago, we stopped doing that. We meet, nothing to do with COVID, we just do this by phone. So she reached out to find out which other agencies had a program. Many in the country don't. I don't think Palm Springs does, Orange County doesn't. So we know that sometimes people have it, sometimes they don't. This is really made possible because of the cemeteries and mortuaries. So this is the application. And it says, we administer this program with the support of Jewish Federation. The program is made possible through the generosity of the cemeteries and mortuaries. So when someone calls, we have a small team of people who are reviewing the program and they're trained. This is sendable. We send this to people. So it says the purpose of the program, the Jewish Community Burial Program provides a free burial in the Jewish tradition to indigent members of the Los Angeles Jewish community whose families are also very low income. So just yesterday we realized we hadn't put Los Angeles in there or the day before when I was reviewing this, we added Los Angeles because that is what it's for, but it didn't say that, especially sharing this. We do get calls from other places. Cemeteries and mortuaries participate on a rotation basis. The program is to be used as a last resort after all family resources, including extended family, have been explored. So qualifications, we recognize that burials are expensive and paying for a burial may feel cost prohibitive. However, this program is limited to community members and families who are very low income. The decedent, the surviving spouse, children, and parents of the deceased must be at Medi-Cal levels. Please note siblings and other applicants may also be screened. Prior to filling out the program's paperwork, all relevant resources must be explored. The application process includes financial proof for all relatives. And then I'll talk to you about the Funeral Practices Committee. I want to remember. So the initial screening, a brief phone screening, will take place to determine if you meet criteria. If the initial screening indicates the family individual may qualify, a full application will be sent to you to be completed. So we try not to send out an application unless it's going to be approved. I would say last year we had about 250 inquiries and 50 approved. So the goal, and that's just an estimate because we don't capture everyone. So in terms of the timing, because we do it all, Amy asked about the timing. Because we do it all by phone, you know, we will review it immediately. It's a committee. The committee is me and a few other people. So as long as they get the paperwork together, and we just say that you have to get the paperwork together. This is the program. So some people might say, and we find that the people who do qualify get the paperwork together, and it's just not negotiable. And I had one myself recently, which I usually don't, but it was a Friday afternoon. And it's hard when you're directly talking to the relative and they're saying, well, this is all we have. But I, you know, they filled it out, but they didn't give me anything. And then I went to a senior manager because this had come to me in a difficult way. And she said, we still need what we need. So I went back and said, we appreciate, we still need this. And then it turns out they didn't qualify. So the comprehensive application includes the following, but by the way, it can be very stressful. Decedent application, interment authorization, responsibility of relatives for burial, supplemental financial forms, supplemental. And so you go down and it says, what does it provide? The program covers the costs associated with the mortuary and burial of the deceased. Our mortuary and burial services are performed in accordance with Jewish tradition. The program does not provide a rabbi or a gravesite marker. Burial includes both in-ground and crypts. Please note that a crypt burial may be the only option available. The cemetery location, burial plot, or crypt location are assigned based on a rotation among participating funeral service providers. Once the full application and necessary documentation has been submitted, the committee will review the documents and you will be contacted with a final decision. It's almost always same day, unless it's at the end of the day. So then you'll see, and this is why having a student is so helpful. She worked on this all year. We had an old application that was copied over and over. And it's just the basic information here where they passed. We sometimes do pre-need. It's pretty limited, but we sometimes do pre-need. So if we have a client who's, you know, that we can do a pre-need for an existing client, or sometimes people call when someone's on hospice or hospice will reach out to us. So when we're in those situations, we can do a pre-need. If somebody is moving into like we have the Jewish home and they require burial plans and they qualify, we will pre-qualify them. But a letter goes out basically saying, you are qualified based on our criteria now. We don't know if this program will always exist and you may be required to provide future financial documentation because again, we're not paying. So if the cemeteries and mortuaries decide, oh, we don't want to accept a couple $100 in exchange for a burial, we don't have money to then arrange it. So we want to be careful to say what we are able to do. So then you keep going and it says resources of deceased. Are they on Medi-Cal? Do they own their home? If they own a home, they're very rarely ever approved. We had one situation where some other, like a nephew was living in the home, and it was not a home, it was far away, that was worth a lot of money, and this was gonna be his home. So that you go to the committee and you can have an exception. We're not gonna want someone to become homeless, but in most situations, they don't qualify. Because again, this is, you can take money out of your home. We have Jewish free loan. There are other ways to pay for the burial. And again, this is limited. So last year, if we had about 48 or 50, the concern is always that the cemeteries and mortuaries are gonna say, we don't wanna do this anymore. So we get the rent information, any value of life insurance, other assets. Do they have a burial plan? You know, I'd say about a quarter of the time people have a plot, maybe a fifth of the time. There are a number of people who maybe bought a plot who can't pay for the rest of it. So sometimes they'll say they have a plot. If they have a plot, it always goes to that place. Okay, and we can scroll down. Now we've been collecting whether they've passed because of COVID. So the next part is important. And then here is every next of kin. Rabbis, yes, Amy, rabbis do. Amy asked, do rabbis volunteer their service? So JFS sits on a committee with the Board of Rabbis. It's convened by the Federation. It's the Funeral Practices Committee. So that consists of JFS representing Jewish Free Burial, the Board of Rabbis. They talk about funeral practices and trends and fees, and you know, it's been interesting, not something I'm used to being involved in, and the Federation. And so rabbis will volunteer. We just don't say we'll provide that or pay for that. So someone might have a rabbi and want us to pay for that. But if somebody wants a rabbi, they'll have a rabbi. There's a way to get a rabbi. It's just not through us. So then we list every person who's, so that would be children, God forbid, parents, spouse. Or if there's a sibling, we had a situation about a year or two ago where their sibling was advocating, and this was before we had the new application, and it turned out the sibling had quite a bit of money. The expectation is the sibling is going to pay. When I took over this, when I was first working in this program, we had to list every sibling. We would be calling Michigan to try to get proof that the sibling was low income. We don't go to siblings of older people anymore unless they're involved. We've said, you know what? That often didn't work. There were estrangements. Siblings don't want to pay for their siblings' burials or whatever. We do ask, is there any other way? But we don't collect documentation for siblings of like an 80-year-old. We're looking at their kids and their spouse. So, but then you have that checkbox, has that all resources been explored? Yes or no? And then you go down and there's the financial application. This is sort of the proof that they have the right to burial. Occasionally someone doesn't have the right because it's a neighbor or someone, and then we work with the funeral home, mortuary, public guardian or administrator. But this is where they say, you know, I'm in charge and I can authorize this. In a way, this is less important. It's most important at the mortuary and cemetery. You could keep going.
I was letting people in, sorry, here we go.
Okay, and then it says, you know, I agree to pay, if which no one ever does, but says that. It says, I have the right to bury this person. We've kept this form. And it's saying they don't have the right. So this is a form that's new and important. Each person who's considered a next of kin is filling this out. They're giving us a bank statement. They're giving us a tax return. They're filling out their car, their rent, their house, their debts. And sometimes we'll have someone who has a home, but a lot of debt. Occasionally that will work. And then here is the checklist. Obviously the easiest is someone on Medi-Cal without relatives or another relative on Medi-Cal, which is Medicaid. So then we get that back, we review it, the direct person working. It's often we have an administrative person who does a lot of this, who's very strong in administration, is used to dealing with clients, has a lot of expertise, and then also she coordinates, if it's approved, which of the next cemeteries and mortuaries are going to handle it. And she calls them and we sign a contract and we get billed. And then we report to the Federation. Right now we're reporting bi-weekly because there's a lot of money going out. So they want to see this all comes out of one pot of money. So even though the cemeteries and mortuaries don't get paid a lot, it adds up. So then we report to them how many we're doing regularly. So we'll say we had 24 burials and we have to say 12 of them were with Eden and 15 were with Hillside. So that's our reporting. And then, you know, in terms of people who are observant, if a crypt really isn't comfortable for people, by we get to that point, we have not been in a situation where we've forced the issue, but we do want to make people aware. And then we strategically will have people be buried at Hillside where they only offer crypts when that's something that's okay for them. So, but we try to keep it even between all the places and we track that. So if somebody's up next, but then somebody has family buried at Mount Sinai, then we'll do Mount Sinai for that one. But if somebody comes in and they're like, I only want this and this is how I want it, it's like, that's not how this program works. And we've had people who at that point say, well, I have a better option. It's like, you have a better option, then go do that option. This is a last resort. And we actually had someone who was approved and we didn't make a switch because of sort of the information we had, and they left. So they were approved, but they had another way to get buried where they wanted their family member to be buried. So, you know, that is where the program is now. That's sort of like the explanation. It's been around a long time. I am very grateful to the student who could turn this application into something that was much easier to administer and be clearer to people when they ask, so that we can be really clear what the criteria is. So any questions on this, or should we start to go around and talk about other people's programs?
Well, I think we should talk about other people's programs, but I had a question. I don't know if anyone else did. My question was, you said that they, how little do they have to make in order to be accepted? Like, what is your criteria?
It's Medicaid level, so I don't have the attachment, but it says Medi-Cal level, so it's very low.
Okay.
So limited savings, no other way. How do the applicants get to you? Are the funeral homes referring them to you, or is this widely? Both. So people just call. It's not widely publicized. That's the scary thing. I feel like if it was widely publicized, it would close because
too many people.
And sometimes, so I just met with the funeral practices committee and really said to them, I gave them that first sheet. I didn't give them all the rest because the old application kind of floated around. And suddenly we'd end up with a half filled out application, which was a horrible application anyway, that someone we never spoke to. So I said to them, you are welcome to refer, but please tell them that there's a detailed financial screening, because people would call us and say, I was referred by Hillside, like they were approved. And it's like, Hillside doesn't know, and none of them negotiate. So the ones who are participating, which is, you know, Eden, Mount Sinai, Hillside, and to some degree, Havert Kadisha and Malino and Silverman, which is just a mortuary, they don't negotiate. So this is their way of giving back to the community. And then they don't set discounts. So there are some others in the area that I think will negotiate, but they're not part of this. So sometimes we'll refer to a lower cost one, a few that might negotiate if they don't qualify.
Right.
The other thing is we were very fortunate to have a couple, like we had four crypts donated from Hollywood Forever. There's a Jewish section. So we called them and said, will you honor this small fee for opening and closing? And they said, yes. And then last year we had a donated plot at one of our participating mortuaries and cemeteries. So then we had the plot, so they didn't have to donate the plot. So I do think there's opportunity in people donating and getting a deduction and us using those, but there's not infrastructure around how to do that. Yes, so let me see, there were a couple questions.
Right, you have a few questions. I can tell them to you. Are you meeting online with the committee?
Yeah, so the Funeral Practices Committee generally meets 3 times a year. And I give a Jewish free burial report, and I brought the administrative person to the last few so she could meet the people at the cemeteries and mortuaries, because she's really the one talking to them. Now we're meeting once a month online because they're all dealing with a lot of things that have nothing to do with Jewish free burial, like COVID funerals and how do you have that and how many people could come, and people were showing up that weren't too many. So they talk a lot about that. But then I did present to them when they make the referral, be clear that this is a program, but you don't know if they qualify.
Right. Except for the pre-screening, everything else is done after the funeral?
What do you mean? No, all of it's done before the funeral. Nothing gets approved. You need to submit this information or you do not get a burial.
Right. Okay, so it all has to be done before.
Before.
After approval, what is the amount sent? Is this for funeral homes and cemeteries?
Yeah, we send, it's under $500 and it for the cemetery and under $500 to the mortuary.
Are the cemeteries donating the caskets as well?
They are.
And when you say mortuary, does that mean that it's a funeral home? And is it a crypt, an above the ground tomb?
The crypt is an above the ground tomb. I've learned a lot about burials and, you know, in the past couple of years. So a crypt is like in the wall, and Hillside is a very expensive place, but they do crypts.
But the mortuary, does that equal a funeral home?
I think so. That's where they prepare the body and do that.
Okay.
And they don't do Tahara. They don't do that. Haber Kadisha will do that. They have their own rules and we work together with them because they don't have a place to bury, but they do. But so they are a little different, but when it's observant, then we will give it to them. But sometimes they try to collect other money. There's been some challenges, I'll just say that.
Susan Cartman, interesting. Are you in Canada? Is Susan in Canada? Yeah. Is a crypt halakhically okay?
According to some it is, and according to others it's not. Right. So many people are, it's what we have. So for people who don't mind, it is a Jewish section, but if somebody is Orthodox and we get to that point, we don't force that.
Yeah, that wouldn't fly here.
Yeah.
So I had a question, or you had wanted to ask, or maybe you did ask. We wanted to know how many people here have a Jewish burial program. Just raise your hand. So we have, okay, interesting.
Most
wow, a lot of them. You just wanted to hear what she was doing, or you wanted to talk about yours. Who is interested in starting one on this call? Okay, we got a few. Okay, fabulous. So other people, tell us about your programs, right? Do we want to hear others? Jen?
Can I call on Amy? Because she already sent me some documentation.
Okay. So I'm here with Katya, who actually coordinates our program. So Katya, jump in whenever you can. Our program originally started as a way of helping our clients who were indigent. So these were already identified Jewish Family and Children's Service clients who we already had either vetted or knew from other kinds of programs within our agency. And we knew that they were very, very low income. And what has happened, I would say over the last 5 years, especially, Katya, correct me if I'm wrong, but 5 to 6 years is we've seen a real shift. That instead of our referrals coming from within the agency, let's say from our Holocaust services or from our senior services, our referrals have come from the funeral homes in the community, and that's been really problematic for us. We have some funeral homes, when I talk about funeral homes, mortuaries, that's what I asked the question. We have some who are traditionally Jewish family-owned funeral homes, and we also have several funeral homes, big ones, that are part of national conglomerates, I guess you'd call them, who have like their Jewish piece of it that they brought in through one of the formerly family run funeral homes in our area. And our biggest challenge, I would say right now, is that funerals, as we know, are very, very expensive. An individual may come in for a funeral planning and they hear the price, they're in grief, they are not necessarily expecting what they're hearing. And then what begins is this negotiation, like in a shuk or something, you know, well, we can take off this amount. Well, maybe we can take off this amount. And why don't you call Jewish Family and Children's Service and they can help you. And that's kind of where the problem starts and ends, because we get these very wide ranges of prices for the same services, and we can't make head nor tail over how to do that.
Can I ask you, do you pay them or is it donated? Like, because ours is really donated.
It's through our federation. It's money that's been put aside through, that has been budgeted through our federation. We're allowed to pay up to $1,000 per funeral.
Okay.
In Massachusetts, at least, if the funeral is below a certain amount, then MassHealth, which is Med-Cal, I guess, in California, would reimburse, but it involves a lot of paperwork to put in an application, and more often than not, it's refused. So the funeral homes end up in a situation where they're bargaining with Katya, or they're bargaining with us, or one of the other agencies that we work with, and we're trying to bring down the cost. And the other thing that we're finding is that many of the funeral homes will hold up the funeral unless somebody puts the majority of the amount on a credit card.
Mm.
And most of the time, these are not people who can afford to have something on their credit card. So we've tried to play nice and try to negotiate. We've tried to do it through personal relationships. We've tried to educate people. We've tried to bring people together to make this more of a Jewish community effort. And I think the part that I feel stuck at, and Katya, you can add if you want, is how do you engage the funeral homes to feel that this is part of being a Jewish community member? Because I don't think we're going to go any further unless we're working in partnership. We've made it really clear in our description of what we consider a Jewish funeral that we will pay for, because clearly if someone goes in and they choose a $10,000 casket, that's not something we're going to help with. But a lot of times people don't even realize that, and they're going forward with that, and then afterwards they're stuck. So
I will tell you that are not allowed, if they are part of this program, they are not, they've had people come in and want to change caskets. No, we talk about that all in the beginning. If you can't afford it and you are indigent and you're doing this program, this is a basic funeral. And they would get very upset at the funeral homes. I mean, it's different because maybe they're donating, but they're like, this person came in and asked for this and asked for that. We have occasionally, if they want something religiously that's not included, then they can pay. So I think that's part of the issue too. It's what it is. And you can't say, well, I can't afford the burial, but I can afford all these other things. But in our situation, the cemeteries and mortuaries are pretty much donating the whole thing. There's no one paying but this nominal fee. It's not like we're part of the solution. You guys sound like you're part of the solution.
So,
well, but only in a very marginal way, I think. Only in a very marginal way, because if a low-income person is left with thousands of dollars on their credit card because they weren't directed towards the help, or they weren't aware of what the choices were, then they come to us, it's after the fact.
What's the cheapest burial? It's still probably very expensive.
What was it, Katya, that...
You know, it's very hard to say because we don't have... it's always a difference to get help from the state, from MassHealth, funeral homes, and cemeteries cannot charge more than $3,500, which usually never happens. Sometimes, and I don't know how they're doing it, what is the reason, but right now, I think that most common would be $5,000 or $55,000.
So you're helping people, it sounds like, with $1,000, and then they're figuring out the rest, or occasionally the state reimburses. And I assume if the state reimburses, then you can't pay anything. That's the total reimbursement, or can you still pay?
No, we can still pay. And oftentimes, if it comes down to a really low amount, we're bringing in another Jewish agency. It's not a federation agency, but it's another Jewish agency. Or we're trying to find money from other resources enough so that the funeral home will then negotiate and say, okay, we'll forget the rest. Or sometimes the funeral home then goes to collections and starts calling the person to collect on the amount that's left.
The biggest issue that they're not going to do funeral, they're not going to do anything until they would receive something in any form. It can be cash, it can be credit card. Mm-hmm. And they would refer it back to us. So usually when we would get the calls, it's already $1,000 or $2,000 paid because people want to make sure that it's Jewish funeral, so they can hold it for 2 weeks until people, you know.
Yeah, and we can turn these things around in about 2 to 3 days if people are quick to get it. I'm curious if it sounds like one of the issues is in this case, the cemeteries and mortuaries are not as much part of it. I'm curious if anyone has a relationship with, like we do, where the cemeteries, JFS Atlanta or JFNCS. Yeah.
I'd be interested in the same thing, but I'd be interested in finding out how you develop those relationships.
Right. So I can speak to, I'm the community chaplain in Atlanta through our Jewish Family Service. And I've been with I've been here 8-9 years. I cannot speak to the history of the program, but I can tell you what we have. All right, so where to start with it? We have plots. There's one cemetery that's way out on the west side of outside of town. It's where the older Jewish community used to be. But we have donated plots there. And I don't know how many, but it's more than we'll ever use. And so that's always where unless a family has a plot, that's where the burials take place. We have within the agency budget, I believe it's $5,000 a year. And we have one Jewish funeral home here in Atlanta with whom we partner. So what they do basically is they cut their price to the $1,000. The family has to pay for the opening and closing of the grave. That's a non-negotiable that they have to come up with, but they can get everything else. If they need a rabbi, I'm a rabbi. If they need a rabbi, I do the service. Lots of times though, and if they need an Orthodox rabbi, there's always one who will do it, obviously. And the other thing that we do that I haven't heard with the other programs is that, you know, we'll have somebody come in who might already have a plot, but they don't have any money for the casket and the funeral services, those sorts of things. So we'll help them piecemeal. We'll help them piecemeal as well. When it comes to vetting and doing the financial intake, several different folks in my office tend to do it. It's kind of whoever picks up the phone at that point. But we have such a relationship with our funeral home here that we all trust them. They're going to vet more stringently than we will. And so that's been a terrific relationship here in town. And when somebody needs a plot, we'll give a plot. I don't even know if we, how much vetting we do for a plot. Because we have enough so that we'll give those, we'll donate those. So that's what we have here in Atlanta.
And I think Sandy wanted to talk too about her program. Is she there? What happened to her? There you are. Sandy, did you want to say something?
What about, someone from St. Louis did also, seems to have a program.
I guess that'd be me unless Kathy's on also. She's my supervisor. So we do have an indigent burial program. It restarted a few years ago. It's through Federation, and we administer it at JFS, and I'm a financial social worker. So our process so far, it's not as direct as yours, which is the funeral home identifies people who say, I won't be able to afford the funeral. They make them sign the contract anyway. They do the funeral. Then people who are in need come to me to be screened for whoever else is available, usually me. And the good thing is that I'm also screening for if they have not been a part of a financial assistance program, I can identify needs they may have had anyway. The criteria would be about our normal program, 175% of federal poverty level. We also look for relatives. We ask them about life insurance. If they're putting us on, we can't really do much. I'm assuming you're in the same situation. They say they don't have it. That's the relative didn't have it. We don't have as many. We have probably, I think, I didn't count, 5 or 6 cemeteries, 2 funeral homes that we work with. So our latest indigent plan, we did work with the funeral homes to come up with this latest plan. What it did not do was do anything for the cemeteries. So the cemetery directors would like us to fix this problem. We give a decent amount back to the funeral homes. So that's right now we negotiated $2,200. The average funeral here is costing $6,000 or $7,000. And that's just for funeral services. That's not the plot.
That's broken down. Wow.
So there's some modifications I would like to make, including trying to make the cemeteries happy. I also feel badly. They either qualify, we pay $2,200, it's gone. The funeral home's not supposed to ask them for more. If they don't qualify, they may only be a little over our qualifications, and suddenly they owe $7,000 that I don't know what could be done. So that's our program so far. I'd like some updates. We probably do about 2 to 4 a year right now. There was just one situation where they were over criteria. They pretty well knew they were, but the rabbi thought they had a whole lot less than they did, and they came in to make the rabbi happy. They were fine with being turned down. So that's it. I would just like to hear what other agencies do and kind of update our own program when I can.
Hold on, Jen. I know that Sandy was having trouble, and I know she wants to talk, and then Leah wants to talk. But I thought this was an interesting question. Maybe someone can discuss it. For existing programs, if you're working with an indigent couple, would you save a spot next to the deceased for the spouse? Probably not.
That would be up to the cemetery mortuary. We did recently have a survivor. The criteria is a little looser for survivors, just a little. And we have done survivors who live out of our area, Palm Springs we have, once in a while. But I think the person passed soon enough, but that hasn't come up that often. That's recently, they died within 3 months of each other, and they did have a spot nearby. I don't know.
We save a spot.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And it seems like in Atlanta, they're all together, so that would be less of an issue.
Right. So, Sandy, did you want to say something?
I could speak to that. They're in the same section of a cemetery, but without the grave marker. Whoever released, because we released the plot from our office, not the funeral home. We have, between us and the cemetery, we have that record. But theoretically, we could do it. The question is, nobody, we don't pre-qualify. We don't entertain an application until there's a death. So, there would be some logistics there, but in theory, we could do it. In theory, we could.
There's Sandy's cat. Real quick, can I just, with a show of hands, how many people do pre-need? We do occasion pre-needs. Did just JFS in Boston do some or no?
Montreal
does pre-need also. Okay, Sandy, sorry.
I'm sorry. Can you all hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, good. I have a new computer and suddenly things were not going the way I wanted them to. Yes. We have sort of a hybrid sort of thing from what everyone has discussed. We like JFS and LA, are the screeners for Federation. But Federation has a fund. We have about last year we had $37,000. Long before me, I've only been here 2 years, so I'm really trying to understand all this. But sometime in the past, perhaps 20 years ago, there was a consortium between the one Jewish mortuary in the Seattle area and synagogues that had cemeteries, and I think they're all related to synagogues. And they were rotating who would take each one. It's very proscribed in terms of the actual practice, and it does what each funeral it costs. $4,100. The actual market rate is about $10,000. The rest is what is donated. by the cemeteries and the funeral home. So what is covered is the plot, the burial preparation. There is a rabbi fee. $150 goes to a rabbi. And there's a very small headstone. There's a prescription on what kind of headstone can be there. The family can't place a headstone. The whole thing is extremely proscribed. It is supposed to be a last resort, as in LA. The issue has been our referral. We don't do pre-need, and our referrals in the last two or three years since I've been here have primarily come from Chabad rabbis. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, I can't think of the right word, but I'm just going to say political sort of issues that keep jumping up. And the original consortium itself no longer meets. And so there's been two or three cemeteries that kind of seem to be taking the burden. And as we've gone, we have maybe 12 burials a year. Those cemeteries are now, some of them getting very upset and wondering about our screening mechanism. I'm really interested, Jen, if you would be able to share your public document, because you have some nice language. We're getting into, we do not require verification of income. I think we may need to do that. The goal has been to respond so that there can be a funeral within as short of time as 24 hours. But getting all that documentation together in that time at that frame.
So that's something, you know, and that was before me, even with the old application. And the person who supervised before for many years is observant, and quite strictly so. And still, she would say, I want to do this as quickly as possible. This is our requirement. And then we can turn it around quite, you know, within hours. It's approved or not approved. But you have to be able to hold the burial till then, or otherwise it's too late.
Right. No, exactly. And I think this is why I really had wanted to hear what everyone else was doing, because it's very clear that we need to make some tweaks. And there really has to be a more of a community response. And I think the other issue that has come up for us is we have a Reform rabbi who's our CEO, and he has a real interest in, can we help people with this same, who are indigent, meet the same criteria, but they don't need an Orthodox burial. They don't require that. And currently, of course, that it's a very prescribed ritual, and there's it's that or nothing. We can help them with that, or we can help them with nothing. So we've been trying to look at some other models so that we could expand who we can help. But that's what we do, and I'm really, really interested. It's been very helpful to hear all of you, because I feel like we have a good core thing, but it's really helpful to hear the ways we can tweak. And I'm listening and hearing some of the ways I can maybe help with some of the, again, I don't even know what to call it, the mishigas around who's referring and who's eligible and who's Orthodox enough and who's poor enough. I would like to, that's where I think
hard.
We need
to. They're all hard to determine. Right?
I would like, yes, but if I felt like many of you have kind of have bits and pieces where you're getting ahead of that. You know, you're sort of like putting that out ahead of time. And I'm feeling like if we can maybe borrow and tweak some of those things, won't eliminate it, but it will.
Let's hear from Leah. What does she have to tell us? You'll get that, Sandy. I think that Jen will share that. Document,
Lisa, you can actually put what I sent you. That's what I was going to say. You can put it on your website, what
okay,
I sent.
I'll put it in the resource library. You all.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Emergency financial, you know, and case management affinity group. Okay, Leah.
Thank you so much.
Hi. So I'm also going to have Elise come on. She's on this call too. I've been doing this for a while, but Elise has kind of taken it mostly over, which is really helpful to me. I can give you the history of Houston. There was an Orthodox rabbi who's now deceased who came to JFS over 30 years ago and asked us to help with the indigent burial plan. It sounds like some of you also started about that time. Our federation was not interested in assisting with it at that time. I'm thrilled to hear that so many of you now are working with the federation. I mean, they help with so many things. And so we actually have a private fund that's at JFS. Family has given enough to be able to.
Yeah, Leah, you're cutting in and out a little.
Okay. Elise, do you want to talk?
And closer. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes.
The indigent burial has been going on for a while. We have a lot of the same problems that Sandy does, especially with the Chabad community. It seems like the Chabad community does not own any cemeteries. So the Orthodox congregation is upset a lot of times when the Chabad community wants.
Leah, you're in and out. Elise, you tell us what's happening.
Okay, can you all hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we can hear you. Okay.
So I've, like Sandy, I've only been doing this a couple of years. I've been helping Leah, and I'm kind of the go-to person now when we get calls. We get referrals from different places. I mean, we can get them from the Chabad, you know, the rabbis, the community will call us. I mean, again, somebody mentioned that it's not advertised, and it is not advertised, but people do come to us, and they're in a state of flux, and they don't know what to do because they can't afford a funeral. We have everything is rotating. We have three funeral homes that we work with on a rotating basis that we have good relationships with. And I think those relationships have been created over the years, and then as well as the cemeteries through the synagogues, which range from Reform to Orthodox. And we rotate those cemeteries as well, and all of the services through the cemeteries and the funeral homes are everything's donated. So for instance, I mean, we just had one, I mean, like I said, everything's rotated. I just did one actually yesterday. We had one yesterday, and actually the lady called me very thankful and grateful. And basically what we do is when they call us, I mean, we screen them as best as we can. And we ask them if they have a plot, because I do believe somebody mentioned that if sometimes people come in and they might have a plot and they just might need help with the funeral services. So we'll do that as well. So we ask if they have a plot, if they belong to a synagogue, we ask them if they have any money, if there's any life insurance, or if anybody in the family is able to help to contribute to a funeral. So we gather that information, and if they say no, we take them at their word. And most cases, they don't have money for a funeral. It's expensive. I mean, if somebody dies last minute, it's very expensive. So what our funerals include, I mean, they include, and Leah, if I'm missing anything, let me know. The Chaver Kedisha, transporting, picking up the deceased from where the person is, whether they're in hospice, at the hospital, their home, transporting that person to the funeral, to the funeral home, a Chaver Kedisha, Tahara, if they choose. They're buried in a shroud, they're buried in a plain pine box, and this is all included. And What else am I missing? We don't provide any tents. This is all pre-COVID, right? Just pretend it's not COVID, but we don't provide any tents and chairs and things like that. And yeah, we do get pushback from families who say, oh no, I gotta have that. And you know, if you gotta have that, then you're gonna have to pay for it. You're gonna have to go to the funeral home and pay for that if you want all of that. So, it's all graves, and the services are all graveside. We assist with getting clergy, and we have somebody here that if we'll do it from JFS that will do the service. For instance, the one that we did yesterday, this one was done out of order. The funeral home. The cemetery we had to do out of order because she requested that a particular cemetery because family members were buried there previously. So we call the cemetery, we ask their permission if we can go out of line. A lot of times they'll oblige, and a lot of the cemeteries do ask for. We do tell the families if over the year to make at least $1,000 donation to the cemetery because the plot is being donated. Am I forgetting anything, Leah? Anything? You're on mute. You're on mute.
You have to unmute yourself, Leah. There.
So I'll try again. The plots are all donated, but the funeral homes we have to pay an amount to. They donate most of their service, but we're required to pay them for, you know, especially opening and closing the grave.
How much? Because
the grave digger has to be paid. So for the overall, you know, all the different things, the pine box, the opening and closing grave, right now we have a negotiated fee of $1,750. But all of the funeral homes have signed that negotiated fee. It's gone up over the years. When I started, it was $1,000. Before that, it was $850. You know, it just, you know, every time something goes up, it goes up. We cannot do any Sunday or, of course, Saturday funerals because our grave digger will not do the negotiated fee on Sunday. So, you know, and of course, on American holidays, we cannot offer an indigent burial.
I had an interesting, someone wants to share what they are doing, which is Tatiana. So yes, you can share, but I just wanted to see a show of hands. How many people do what Houston does, which is really not vet anyone, just, you know, take them at their word? A lot of
We do vet them, Lisa.
We vet them, but you don't document them with like a income statement or something
We do ask for information. But because we're trying to turn it over sometime within 24 hours,
right?
Very hard to get all of the information LA is getting.
Yeah. Well, I know when I was at JFS in Greenwich, we did the same thing. You know, when I had to give out emergency financial funds, we didn't always get all the it required financial, and you just take people at their word, and especially in, you know, time of death. But you know, sometimes boards don't like that. How do you know? They want
more. Not just that. I mean, we get it within 48 hours, but we have 48 burials with the intensive vetting. So the program was not going to be sustainable if we didn't get that, because the people we miss are going to make it so that the cemeteries and mortuaries aren't going to be willing. So this is what it became, because we had enough people that we'll say. So it's not that we're trying to delay people. It's just the only way to keep this program going is to, and people get it to us. If they have to get the burial and they need it, they take a picture and they send it to us by a picture. We don't make them give us hard copies. They email it. So I'd say we work with people. They fax it. They go to a FedEx and fax it, right. You know, just like they do if they're planning a burial, they have to pay for it. We look at it that
Right.
This is what I
understand that. That's what you do. Yeah. But Sandy says, you know, they ask for financial information on the applications, but they don't always verify it with tax or bank statements. And neither right. did JFS of Greenwich. And
right.
you know, you hope that people are telling the truth, right? You just hope they're telling the truth. So did you want to say something? Yes, Dawn, the recording will be available. But Tatiana wanted to say something.
I'm not usually part of the funeral discussions. This program is managed by my colleague, but I do have kind of general knowledge, and I do see that we are quite different with from other programs that that you shared. So we do have one Havrick edition in Edmonton, and they are the one who give the subsidy for the funerals. And Jewish Family Services Edmonton, we do the screening. However, all the financial documentations and screening, etc., all the discussions happen 30 days after the funeral.
Oh.
So we wait this shloshim 30 days, and only then we invite the remaining family members to have the screening discussion, etc. First of all, the person is buried. There is no discussion around this. The person gets the Jewish funeral no matter what. And 30 days after, we start the discussion, and then we collect in documents and verifying the family members, etc., etc. So that's how it's done right here. So I think that the average amount is $10,000 in Edmonton. So the Havrick edition can drop it down to $6,000 maximum. That's how much they can subsidize. And we do have access sometimes to provincial benefits for funeral expenses for some people too, that we use.
Interesting, very different.
Mm-hmm.
So very trusting, right? You're expecting to get the money back, right? Do you? Do you get reimbursed?
Yeah, I mean, we do. I mean, it's, again, my colleague is usually involved, but so far it's been the same practice been done for not even years, like decades. So it's, so I guess it works. However, it might change. This is why I'm learning about other ways, how other agencies doing, because it changes with the new Havrick edition director every time. So we have to be ready for new procedures.
Did we lose Sacramento? Thank you. I just want to see, does Sacramento have a program? Rebecca? Another California friend.
Hi. So we do not have a burial program, but it has come up before where people need an indigenous burial, and I actually have to go through the county instead. The county only does cremation.
I know.
And that is an issue, especially with our religious Jewish people in our community. And sometimes they find that it's the only way that they can go, unfortunately, and they just kind of grin and bear it. And but we do help with finding sometimes rabbis that can do it for free. Like, we know certain rabbis that might help out as well to do a free service at the graveside, which helps out. I do have a client that is struggling to pay her payments for her plot. She was able to pay for her husband, no problem, but for herself,
mm-hmm.
she's finding it hard to make the payments, and she fears that she's going to lose her side if she doesn't make the payments. I know it's crazy. Anyway,
that's, I wonder if they would rate that if you
share an issue.
Yeah,
but since COVID, we have an emergency fund, and we've listed on our fund as one of the things that people can get help for is for burial expenses, which is new. We never usually say we can help with burial expenses. Mm-hmm. We can help up to $1,500. So I was wondering, just getting a sense from other people what they're doing and whatnot. We have our own screening. It's a general screen for the fund. But basically the person has to be Jewish or part of a Jewish family, because not everyone is Jewish or identifies as Jewish, and then are working for a Jewish organization. So, but basically there are two funeral homes that the Chevra Kedisha here would go to, and then one cemetery. So, yeah, thank you.
Well, good luck, Rebecca, you know, having advertised that, we'll see what happens, you know, if a lot of people take you up on it. And then I guess Kathleen wanted to say something about.
Yeah, first I want to say I'm not from St. Louis. I don't know why it says I'm in St. Louis.
Oh, I thought someone said that.
No, I'm in Phoenix.
So okay.
I don't know what, it's about 110, 12 here today. It's really awful. Anyway, so we don't have a burial program either through JFCS. We do have a program through our Jewish Free Loan Association that's in conjunction with one of the Jewish mortuaries here. And they do drop the cost down quite a bit for people. But I've had a few people that couldn't even do that because they didn't have any relatives. With Jewish Free Loan, you would have to have a relative here that could pay back the loan. Mm-hmm. And we've had a few times over the years that wasn't the case. So when I saw this today, I kind of wanted to jump on this call and see what other communities were doing. This is very interesting. So I'm going to bring this information back to my folks and see what they have to say.
I'm wondering if other cities have funeral practices committee, because I feel like that's where this gets discussed. And the Jewish Board of Rabbis works with the Federation to have this convening. And we're just a small part of that. So I really feel like I always am thanking the mortuaries and cemeteries for making this available. And we emphasize that when we talk to people so that they realize they're really the ones who are taking a couple hundred dollars instead of $10,000 or whatever that is.
I think we heard from everyone on this call except Rochester. Did you want to tell? And I don't know where Dee Schwartz is from. Dee, where are you?
Dee is also Rochester. I can
also
speak.
Rochester.
So, well, she's unmuting.
And we didn't hear
from
you. Oh, you don't have one, so you're listening. Talia?
So we don't have an official program. We tend to kind of reinvent the wheel every time we have a burial. We do have the same county program, which gives $1,200 to somebody who's truly indigent. They have recently started for couples looking at the accounts and splitting whatever was left and taking and deducting that from the $1,200. So it may not end up being very much. We only have one funeral home. We do have a lot of cemeteries, and so many people do purchase plots. But the funeral home is not necessarily, they're hard to negotiate with in terms of rates, but in true cases of need, they have stepped up and negotiated it down. Our Federation really just has a very small fund, and we don't have a real process with an application within everything. It's more like, this is a crisis. This person died with nobody and no money.
Right.
Yeah. Those are the kind of cases that we would come to them for.
After listening to this call, do you think that you would want to talk with them about creating?
Oh my gosh. We would, of course, want to. Sure.
We have the money.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I think the Federation, last I remember, had about $6,000 in the fund.
Wow.
Of course, that can't all be spent on one person. And, you know, giving somebody $500 for a $7,000 funeral is not really super helpful.
Yeah, what ends up happening. Except
for
the county, by the way, I just want to correct, the county of LA will work with us to do a Jewish free burial. So they had county administrators reach out to us. And we have been able to do a Jewish burial under this program with the county signing off. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, they cremate.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, Montreal is an empty, because I think they have a big program. I feel like Montreal might have a bigger program too, but I'm not sure. So Lisa, are we done? What do you think?
I think that this was great. We have a emergency financial assistance meeting next week, the 23rd, just for half an hour after the Yiddidut Toronto webinar. And that's for, that's an Israeli nonprofit that has come up with this really great way to work with people in poverty. And they have outcomes that they, you know, they have forms and they can measure it. And we thought it would be interesting to present to the Network of Jewish Human Service Agencies. And then since we had an emergency financial and case management affinity group call scheduled anyway, we thought we'd just maybe you know, stay on or start again a half an hour, you know, right after it ends. We're going to go into the next call if you're interested. We're going to be on just for a half an hour after that webinar. So that's next week, and I'll be sending something out tomorrow for sure. So thank you all. It was a great idea. Jen, thank you so much for stepping up. And
you're welcome. I'm going to thank that student who we might be hiring for doing all the work. Yeah. Thank you guys very much.
Thanks. Bye, guys. Everyone. Stay safe.